Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And we want to say a very special thank you to the fans. A few fans checked on us while we were off on break or whatever that was. So, I appreciate everyone that's ever tuned in to check us out, to share us, to like stuff, to comment. Yeah. Jump in a group and have a conversation with us. It means a lot. And this is the reason why we're doing this, because we're hoping people are listening and engaging. And so that helps us come back when it's time. So thank you all.
Yes, we appreciate you.
So yay. We actually have been away. So now we're back with probably two episodes this week. Mm-hmm. So this is one of two. The second episode is going to be our crossover, a shot in the prayer episode with the homies, the family over at the Brown Liquor Report.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to that. That is our special in 2020 election coverage. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do what we do here and mix it with what they do there. And we're going to talk politics and guide you through everything that's going on with this election.
Yeah.
So let's look forward to that. But today we're talking about American civil religion.
Mm-hmm. We are jumping into American civil religion because, one, it's really a thing. You would have to have your head in the sand to not realize how charged up the environment is over what it means to be supportive of America, or what it means to critique America, and how that reflects back on us, not just individually, but also within the different groups that we might occupy, not least of which is our religious group. So it's very, very easy to get caught up in the narrative that says a lot of things about America that just are not true, whether we like them or not. So we want to draw the distinction between the God of Christianity we believe the nation was founded upon and the God of America. And this discussion, is meant to not only highlight some of those differences, but we also just want to show how this other entity, this American civil religion, how it functions, and why it is such a formidable challenge to people who identify as Christian.
Exactly. So we are living under the longstanding myth that America is a Christian nation. That's usually upheld by statistics of how many Christians there are in America, and also some of the founding principles, some of the founding written principles of America. And so because some of the founding fathers were Christian themselves, they wrote in that language. And so you find a lot of that in our founding documents that help support the myth that the nation is a Christian nation. But we see something very different in practice, not just now, but at the time of those writings.
Even then.
All right. So let's talk about what it means to be a religion. Religion has certain elements that are common to pretty much all religions. This is not the exhaustive list, but most religions you will find dogma. Dogma is a set of opinions that are commonly adhered to. Dogma is separate from doctrine. Doctrine are things that we find to be true. These are the things that we cannot steer away from. So for instance, in Christianity, one of the doctrines could be the Trinity is something that Christians hold, or beliefs about Jesus and what Jesus did. So those are doctrines. Dogma says, all right, these are the things that this group collectively are going to agree to. And you see that present in, let's say, in Christian different denominations, or the same in different Muslim sects. Like, so for instance, the Nation of Islam has its own dogma. These are opinions that they hold. They may not be held by other Muslims.
Right.
Same thing about Pentecostals. Like, you might shout a certain way, you might keep a tambourine in your pocket. You know, that's just part of it. Like, they have certain things about, like, say, for instance, the Holy Spirit, receiving the Holy Spirit with the evidence of speaking in tongues. That is a dogma of an apostolic tradition, not doctrine. So religions have dogma.
Right.
They also have sacred text of some sort. Now, they could be written text. They could be oral text. If we look at lots of ATR, African tradition religions, hoodoo, there's a lot of oral transmission, which count as sacred text. There's a lot of knowledge that is transferred orally and through experience. That also serves as a sacred text. In Wiccan religions, nature serves as a sacred text. And so religions have these sacred texts as one of their characteristics. Liturgy is important, something that's repetitive, that's done as a ritual. Usually it's something said. That's mm-hmm. an element, worship of the deity of that religion. You have the holy days of that religion, Rosh Hashanah, Ramadan, you know, the Eid Mubarak, all of, yeah. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of holy days in religion, and then they have their right. priest or religious leaders. If we consider that those are elements that we see in religions, how does this apply to America or America civil religion? So I want to problematize the mm-hmm. myth of America being a Christian country.
Right.
Even though the founders wrote Christian ethics into the founding documents, those documents do not synergize well with how the country came to be a group of colonies through the genocide of the indigenous peoples, or mm-hmm. what's supporting the wealth of the people writing those documents through the institution of slavery.
Right.
That's one problem with the myth. You have Christians writing documents that sound Christian, but doing unchristian things. There's also this belief of the separation of church and state.
Absolutely. Separation of church and state is intentionally rooted in what was going on in Europe as some of these groups started to immigrate from there. So the idea and the ideal here was, can we create something better than what we're leaving? And at this time in world history, you have the rise of philosophers and science as another school of thought that should be, you know, adhered to and looked up to just as much, if not more, as the church. So America provided, the founding of America provided the opportunity to experiment with it, at least attempting to set up a secular government.
Right. And so they're setting up a secular government with many factors leading to what's in their consciousness at the time. One of those is the 30 Years' War that occurred in, that started in 1618 in Europe. Mm-hmm. From 1618 to 1648, there was a war that was actually started on church values. And at this time, the church was the head of state.
Yes.
They influenced what the state. Now, they worked together, but the church had much more influence than we see now in this country and we see now in Europe. So because the church had strategic plans, those plans did not align with all of the other plans in Europe, Spain, Germany, all these places. And they ended up fighting this long, bloody war that eventually people got tired of mm-hmm. and said, look, we can't do this anymore. We're going to have to cut off this relationship that we've maintained for so long that allowed us to colonize all these other lands, build imperialism across this hemisphere. And we just have to do something different now. That happens. Then, you know, a little over 100 years later, you know, you have people coming from there to here, not just 100 years later, but between then and when they write these founding documents, people are migrating and they have this in the consciousness and all of these other things that are working against to say, OK, we probably shouldn't have the church and the state mix lest we repeat a 30 years war. Mm-hmm.
So they tried. They attempted to do it. But again, flaws being present in every design. Part of the flaw here is things were written as though they already were, when truly they were ideals that we were intending to reach. People say, oh, we have freedom of religion. It's often misinterpreted because you don't realize, or the average person may not realize, that freedom of religion is also the freedom to not be religious. So even that, an idea like that has been misconstrued to either further the myth that this is a Christian nation, or to kind of grab the power back from the misinterpretation of the statement that this is actually intended to be a country, a place on this earth where you could choose to worship or not, to believe or not, to interact with a faith group or not. So words mean things. We've said that before. Words mean things. And a lot of this comes down to who's saying what and whether or not they're really defining it, or if they're misinterpreting certain ideas to fit that a certain narrative.
Right. And that idea of who's writing the narrative is important during the formation here, because mm-hmm. when you have voices that are left out, you only have what you have. You can't develop a state without inserting your beliefs. Now, where do these beliefs come from? These beliefs come from white Protestant men who are wealthy. And that's how you get this white Protestant capitalist patriarchy baked into what it is that we have. And that becomes the foundation for American civil religion. So what is American civil religion? It's a set of symbols and practices designed to inspire belief in the nation. In ACR, or American civil religion, the God is the state or the nation. But the thing is, how do you develop a religion without naming the gods? The answer is you don't call it a religion. We call it a state. And so we start to build up this set of symbols and practices designed to support the state or the God. And so American civil religion is beginning to form. This concept is something that was coined in 1967 by sociologist Robert Bella in his article, Civil Religion in America. And basically, Bella calls ACR the religion of the state. That's one of the things that we're seeing. The function is to define what is America and how do we pay tribute to America.
Mm-hmm. So this becomes important because from its very inception, America is, it is more so an idea than anything else. And it's an idea that is constantly under threat of not being executed or being short-circuited. It becomes very important early on to say, here's what we have in common. Here's what we do better together than apart. You know, America threatened to be at least 13 different nations prior to the establishment of the Constitution. But a lot of that politics, and one of my favorite movies is, they made us watch it in college, but it's called 1776, the musical, right? But it goes through all the motions of these 13 colonies that we're faced with the question, do we come together and become one nation or are we better alone? And it was all of these different cultural and economic and institutional questions that came up when you juxtaposed South Carolina's interest with, let's say, Rhode Island or Maryland's interest with, let's say, Georgia's. These things came up and what emerged was, here are the things that we can agree with. And some people, we shouldn't romanticize it at all. One of the things that we could agree with, you know, as a country coming together was that if it was white, male, and rich, it was probably right and it deserved to lead. From the very beginning, we're saying that that which is female, that which is indigenous, that which is brought in for indentured servitude or enslavement, none of these entities and none of these contributions matter beyond that which is white, male, and rich and their ability to control it. That is why it keeps coming up, because American civil religion flies in the face of what we articulate Christian beliefs to be, even though we use those Christian beliefs to further the tenets and the goals of ACR.
So let's talk about how ACR functions as a religion.
Okay.
The religious leaders or the priests in the what we've discussed before are the three branches of government. So you have the legislative, executive, and judicial branch, of which the executive branch is the Pope-like figure of the three.
Right.
Within those, you have different factions or parties, and both sides, whether it's Democratic, Republican, Libertarian, Green Party, whatever, all of these sides believe that they are to use the state to achieve the party goals. Because each group has a different set of goals, you have to start to question what's going on. If it's American civil religion, why don't we all have the same goals? This problem comes in the nebulous definition. Because we haven't named a God, because we haven't named this a religion, there's room for dissent and disagreement amongst people.
So we say we haven't named a God, but previously we identified that it's the God of capitalism. When you take all things together and really look at what was America except for the establishment of the strongest economy in the world, and whatever we put into the foundation of the establishment of that economy, the economic God is the one that I feel is the one that we try not to define. Yet it is capitalism that America says, I'll lay down my life for. This is why we send people to fight these wars. This is why we throw our weight around on the international stage, because the unnamed God is actually the God of what we said has become most important. It's our economy. And it plays out in so many different ways. Things might even start off as cultural, even religious or ideological questions, but there's always a capitalist slant. If it is happening in America, it has something to do with what is at the core of what it means to be American. A lot of people were uncomfortable at the beginning of this pandemic because it disrupted our day-to-day life. It slowed everybody down. But what emerged was that one of the major things, just like I said, the colonies were looking for what we have in common, you know, to keep from becoming 13 different nations. One thing that emerged about American culture 8 months ago was that consumerism is the culture. We buy things. We try to get things for a lower cost. We try to build wealth. We look for opportunities to exploit, to grow that wealth. So we say it's unnamed, but it is literally the elephant in every room. How are we going to get this money? And when we come in closer to define, if you're saying that it's the parties are looking for ways to leverage the state to satisfy the God. So it's almost like the Democrats might say, here's how we can do it, and it won't cause that much pain, and we'll satisfy the machine. The GOP says, no, here's how we can do it, and we're going to satisfy the machine, and we're okay with the pain. We have a higher tolerance for pain. People will die. You know, libertarians might come in, or a Green Party might come in. It's always a different idea on how to ultimately satisfy the machine. Anarchy here means completely disrupting and disconnecting from the capitalist model. That's what anarchy in America means. It doesn't mean so much an overthrow of government as it means an overthrow of the economy.
So it's important to keep the religious framework of ACR in our minds. It is a white Protestant capitalist patriarch. So you can go back to, anyone can go back to the episode that we did recently, like you mentioned it, on the altar of capitalism. Uh-huh. This is the satisfaction of the God. These are the sacrifices of the God. And the different parties are, when you say to satisfy the machine, it's the sacrifice to that God, however that group sees it. And so It's important to know in a white Protestant capitalist patriarchy how each of these pieces function. Let's talk about how these ideas kind of overlap. And this, and because you mentioned this earlier. So if we take a Christian theology or Christian set of practices. Christianity has symbols like a cross, like a fish, or something like that. Mm-hmm. The American symbols, the symbols for ACR, the American flag, the bald eagle. Both Protestantism and ACR share this idea that America is a city on a hill. In the Bible, it says we are a city on a hill. We, the followers, are a city on a hill. In ACR, it says America is that city. And so we start to see this in John Winthrop and the Pilgrims, and Ronald Reagan brings this concept to the fore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah. So when we talk about symbols, I think it's important that to talk about that Confederate flag. So the American flag is accepted as that major symbol, and the bald eagle is a ubiquitous symbol. So it's universal to all of the United States that we look at this vision of this bird flying free with, you know, expanse, can fly from country, you know, from coast to coast, as a reflection of this American ideal of freedom, right? So right under that, we've allowed other symbols, sub-symbols, to become just as important. And when we began to disrupt that Confederate flag for the symbol that it represented to different parts of America, I think that is one of those things that raise the tenor around the conversation of what does the flag mean anyway? So you have people saying it's heritage, other people saying that it's hate. The only reason why that debate got to the top level, got so loud, is because that flag had been a part, have been allowed to be a part, a lesser part of this ACR, where we didn't completely get rid of the of this symbol of our tearing apart. We redefined it because we wanted to placate a part of the population that thoroughly sees themselves through that imagery. Heritage hate or not, they are absolutely committed to being proud of the root that, yes, to others means something completely different, something negative, something deadly, something representing necrosis. As it takes root, everything around it dies. There are people who were allowed to let that grow and fester and become a part of family tradition, let it become a part of community tradition, let it become a part of how they see themselves, how they define themselves as good Americans. It wasn't by accident. It helped the country have something in common, lest it become two different countries.
And that idea is baked in. So as we talk about those founding documents, all of those founding fathers or members were not from the North. So you have a Union and you have a Confederacy, and they all are together writing this sacred text for the country. So we're drawing this combination. We're drawing this link between Christianity or Protestantism and ACR because of the function of Protestantism in ACR. So one of the sects of Protestantism advocates for evangelism. You go out, you tell people about your God. In ACR, we evangelize democracy. Mm-hmm. We go out to the world and say, this is the thing that you need to be. Whatever you have is not as good as this. And so if you are like this, then you're like us. It functions the same way as evangelism.
And the evangelism of that democracy behaves the same way that we are talking about Protestantism behaving for ACR. It's a cover, because that evangelism of democracy is really a soft or firm introduction into capitalism. It is about your market. It is about access to your market. It is much the same as this idea of Protestantism ushering in this idea of ACR, which is not Christianity. It is kind of, it's a soft introduction or firm of the core of what those actual foundational blocks are, that it is white, that it is male, that it is wealthy. And it will align itself with Protestantism to get in the door, to begin to function, to begin to operate.
Right. And so if we can't do it through our speech, through evangelism, we do it through our missions. We actually go there. And so we see the missions in Protestantism and also missions in ACR through saving other countries through military action, coercing other countries through sanctions and allied partnerships. And so these are ways that we bring them to this white Protestant capitalist patriarchy. Mm-hmm. Protestantism has its hymns. In ACR, we have the national anthem. We have America, My Country, 'Tis of Thee. We have all these things that we sing that generate this enormous pride in the religion. We sing it together. We know the lyrics. Some people. Our rituals. Same thing like we have in Christianity. Like we may have a Palm Sunday or prayer or anything like that. Like we have voting. We have inaugurations. They have in Protestantism, they have holy temples and shrines. We have our monuments. We have Mount Rushmore. There's in Catholicism, Christianity, there's veneration of the saints. There's also veneration in Protestantism too. We do the same thing. People are on our money, on our stamps. We hand these out. Yeah. We remember them in various ways. And so the presence of these symbols give you an idea, or it serves as something familiar to anyone. And it kind of is a code for anyone that is Protestant or Christian or religious. It says, you know, we're like you, especially Christians. It says, we're like you. Like, you should be able to recognize us. Mm-hmm. And you spoke about this earlier. It starts to blur that line because you're able to use symbols. So ACR doesn't just have its own symbols. It leverages Christian symbols. So it's doing that. It becomes exceedingly difficult to understand that you're actually dealing with a separate thing. You're not dealing with a Protestant faith or a Christian faith. You're dealing with another faith, with another God, with its own set of beliefs, rituals, rites, dogma, all of these things that make a religion. And the slick thing about it is ACR can go in and out of the two. So we're talking about two systems, two gods. But if you're not careful, you don't notice that you're doing the two things. It can leverage Christian symbols whenever it pleases. It can say, in God we trust on the money. It can support Christian ideas in the founding documents. It can do all of these things, but be clear, it is not the Christian concept. It is not the same religion. And the reason why is because that God is generic. Right. The ACR God is not as specific. And that's why we're trying to name it here. We're trying to name it as this white Protestant capitalist patriarchy. The reason why it has to leverage Christian symbols is because people who are actually Christian would understand, if you separate these out, that the God of ACR would not be as powerful as the God of Christianity or the God of Judaism or the God of Islam. The reason why you keep it generic mm-hmm. and keep it nebulous is so people won't say, wait a minute, mm-hmm. why are we holding this thing up equal to this other thing that I believe so strongly in? And so it benefits ACR to not name these things. Bella talks about how ACR adopts the iconography of Christianity. So we saw in Lafayette Square, the crossing of the street, the to go stand in front of a church and hold up a Bible. So Christian leaders see that and it feels like something they know. It feels familiar. And so they can support it. They can get behind it. I heard on radio today, I don't know how this, I tuned to the wrong station. Basically, this administration has been the most Christian administration in the history of the country. They've elected all these conservative judges and pro-life and all these things. And so this is the weaving in and out of ACR and Christianity that happens to just grab a few Christians, to grab a few whites, to grab a few men. And that's just kind of how it works. It's playing both sides.
Right. Really, what is, you know, if we talk about how you can misrepresent that label on this particular administration, it would have to do with the fact that when you strip it away, what you've really cemented, like we talk about the courts all the time and how masterfully the courts have been changed, the federal courts, the federal judiciary has been changed under this administration. What has been enshrined for the next generation because of these lifetime appointments mm-hmm. is the continuation of the white male, seemingly Protestant patriarchy structure. In your judicial institutions, it is in no way guaranteed to function as a outright Christian lever of justice. In no way will it do that. What it will do is protect the status quo that has been created that protects those people who fit those characteristics to somehow always bubble to the top of whatever system we are either, you know, trying to promote, trying to design, ultimately, maybe even trying to tear down or redesign. Mm-hmm. It has been solidified. It's almost as if I go to prepare a place for you type of thing. Like I have prepared a place in this federal judiciary where it's going to be hard for everybody who is not that to get parity and to receive equity in front of what we say is justice.
This is a really important episode because it is critical that we name this so that we know what to do with it. When you don't define it, it becomes whatever people think they want it, and it changes. And that's how you get the different ideologies in the different parties. Bella, in his essay, he said, American civil religion was never anti-clerical or militantly secular. On the contrary, it borrowed selectively from the religious tradition in such a way that the average American saw no conflict between the two. That's how it functions. It'll take when it needs to just to make sure it retains its base or retains its followers. But ACR is a unique religion. Mm-hmm. It resembles Christianity. Because there's that Protestant, like you said, seemingly Protestant element in the white Protestant capitalist patriarchy. But that Protestant element is only there to validate the other three elements.
Absolutely. To only make those other three things seem palatable. And when we look at how that Protestant element has been leveraged to keep those who would critique the other three parts, that which is white, that which is, you know, just unapologetically capitalist or that which is patriarchal, it always uses the Protestantism to kill the critique or to attempt to silence the critique. That is where we are today. And I believe that at no time in any of the marginalized communities fighting for equity and parity has the state not reacted, overreacted, and reacted to the point of extermination to bring about some sort of normalcy, right? So after the Civil Rights Acts of the mid-20th century, we see that the state reacted to the point of being willing, okay, to rob its people, to unleash economic devastation on its people, to poison its people, to look back on what the 80s did to different groups as far as being able to retain wealth, and then looking at the war on drugs and what it's done to different communities as far as retaining human capital. Okay, so human capital is important. It is unheard of that millions of people would be locked away as non-violent drug offenders, or that people would experience a almost like killing fields in their communities because gang violence, gun violence, not even gangs, because I feel like gangs get a bad rap all the time, but gun violence and the pervasion of violence in the American community, almost as if violence is a side product or a byproduct of American culture. These things were allowed to happen. They were facilitated by the state. They were facilitated by a structure that says, I'm willing to unleash this to reassert power over the structure that now you are not only trying to critique, but you're trying to upend. So you can have access to housing, but that will do nothing for white flight. That will do nothing for the crippling of your schools. And I will unleash hell in your communities because you had the audacity to repel me. That happened. And it's almost like the bed that you make for others or the ditch that you dig for others, you might fall in. So certain things were not clarified or could not clearly be seen until the threat looks different. So when the threat was the war on drugs, because we're trying to fight the scourge of crack and cocaine and whatever, it looked a certain type of way. But it also looked like the state kind of crushing the children of those people who fought for equity and parity and took some of their power back. The response was to poison. The response was to rob, was to kill communities, to kill jobs in certain areas. That happened. That happened when the victims became whiter. Only then did the state have to, or was the critique now, you can't do that to us. And this is what has forced what a lot of people say is like, why does it seem like we are being more responsive to those people who are falling prey to opioids? Or why does it seem like now, you know, the state would like to infuse money into communities which might unleash gentrification on people? And gentrification is economic violence to me. But why does this seem like the state is more willing to respond to certain victims than others? It is because the design was already there. The design was there, and almost overnight, the victims changed. The victims changing actually helped clarify the structure that we're talking about. The God remains undefined. It does not matter who feeds it. It will dine on your children. It will dine on mine. But when your children began to be the entree, you might have had the political standing, the social standing. Somehow your proximity to that which was, as we said, white, seemingly Protestant, definitely capitalist, and willing to uphold the patriarchy, those critiques got further than those people who did not match those four tenets. That's very important to understand, because the critiques are what kind of shine a light on this invisible structure and this unnamed God that need to be shown and need to be defined. Like you said, that's why we're trying to do it here. But you have to be willing to say things. This is a very important conversation, because it's the articulation of what a lot of people may be thinking, but they might not know how to say. Even we are struggling with keeping, you know, making sure that right here at the center, we're saying, we're not talking about the church. We are not talking about the church right this second. That is important. I hope everybody is just keeping up with that. We're not even talking about the church yet.
We're not talking about the church. We also are not even talking about America proper. We're talking about a religious system built up around America. But I want to spend some time on, if this is a religion, as we're defining it, as Bella defines and we're expounding upon, this is a religion, what are the heresies of that religion? What are the things that work against or speak against what we've seen in ACR? So ACR is, one of its functions is to define what are American ideas. Uh-huh. And because if it does that, it can also define what it means to what be un-American.
Absolutely. So that happens politically, where I think that many terms have, again, they've been co-opted and they've been redefined, and words mean things. And when people don't know what words mean, they misuse them. So politically, we see this happening when the suggestion of a different way to function politically in society is labeled socialism or labeled Marxism, not because the idea fits those tenets, but because the idea is flies in the face of the foundations of this ACR. So to suggest that the pie be cut differently, to, let's say, benefit people who may not be in the majority in the full country's population, but let's say within the state or within the city, or how people actually live. We say, why don't we look at how we distribute our resources? Sometimes people look at redistribution and say, no, that is socialism. That is Marxism, because the current distribution setup benefits them, or they believe that it does. So these things, and they end up not being explored because we've already said off limits because it's un-American. And if you continue down that path, you are committing the sin against ACR, which is to have an un-American idea or to even flirt with something that doesn't go with that mainstream. It happens culturally. When we speak of ideas of diversity or equity or parity, again, diversity, equity, and parity are subjective to whatever you're trying to diversify, whatever you're seeking equity with, or whatever you're seeking parity to. So if we say that this ACR is propped up upon whiteness, maleness, wealth, and proximity to Protestantism, then when we say we need to diversify, that could be misconstrued as un-American because it takes away from those original core characteristic. When we say we want equity, that can be misconstrued as un-American because, again, it forces the question and the conversation and even the action of redistribution. Parity, you're talking about, you know, equal. We've attempted parity. Parity has been touched in the Constitution with the 5th and the 14th Amendment. It is something that we say that we want to have. You know, all men are created equal. Everybody should be treated equally in front of the law. It does not happen. And in critiquing, in trying to change, in trying to pull down that structure and rebuild what we think should really be there, all of these things have been misconstrued as un-American. Currently, right now, you have a social movement that has been vilified because the social movement is not a play on words. It's not a cool trend. It is saying that if you say it's a question of logic. So if you say that all things matter, then under the umbrella of all, you're definitely saying that these things matter. And what has been misconstrued, what has been misdefined, is to say that if these things matter, then all things don't matter. And now that has become a noisemaker that takes away from the core of that critique that says that we are behaving as a society as if these things do not matter, as if these particular people are not as important as those people. To refute that, the people who repel that, who say, no, all of it matters and you don't matter enough, or I don't want to get into your boat, those people have said that the people who are trying to be seen, the people who are fighting for recognition, the people who are fighting for parity, the people who are fighting for the same thing that the law seems to provide to others, which is justice, those people who are asking for justice are somehow now un-American because they're asking for justice from the same structure that doesn't provide it in the first place. That is a huge shift on how we define things.
So the two heresies, political and cultural heresy, are also joined by religious heresy. And from a religious standpoint, we've covered that ACR borrows selectively from Protestantism. And that's how you get what's called a pro-life stance, because it'll come from this idea that Jesus said, suffer anyone who prevents these children from coming to me. It'll be better for a millstone to be tied around their neck and for them to be drowned or thrown into the sea than to prevent these children from getting to Jesus. And so from that, you get this idea that we need to protect the children. We need to be the voice of the children. Those fetuses are children that we need to protect. And that will ignore all of the other things that the Bible says that would also indicate or align with the pro-life stance. So it's not borrowing, it's borrowing the pieces that it wants, and leaving out these other pieces. And so the heresy is when, once we start to introduce liberation theologies or theologies that do introduce this diversity and this equity and this parity from the Protestant scriptures, that doesn't align with the beliefs of ACR. You start to see the cracks. You start to see the ways that this isn't Protestantism at all. This is a little bit here and a little bit there, but not that thing over there. Not this whole section over here. We're not doing that because we still need to maintain the whiteness, the capitalism, and the patriarchy. And so the pieces of Protestantism that we take are the pieces that uphold that. Anything else is considered heresy.
But this also affects how we look at, again, religious diversity as well, because coming out of the September 11th attacks, what happened was that it all of a sudden it became un-American to be from Middle Eastern countries or to be a practicing Muslim. And while that might have always been something that was looked at as an outlier or pushed you into, let's say, a more marginalized existence, this hard rejection of American Muslims pushed us into this idea of to be other. Not saying that they were asking for people to convert, but what they were saying is, you at this particular moment in time, you are not a part of this group. And it was very, very easy to other them, to label them, to ostracize them. And we continue to pay the price for that. So it's not even just the liberation theologies, which can be picked up by marginalized groups that adhere to Christianity and bring them forward and provide fuel and provide power for their struggle. But it also affects how America hosts other religions that are able to be here, be rooted here, and thrive here, and have been here, you know, for decades, if not 100 years or more, because we are saying, we're retreating into ACR.
So we started off by discussing how the separation of church and state was in the consciousness of the founders for various reasons. But then we built up a religion that is the church and the state. So is the separation of church and state possible when both the church and the state are the same entity? That's a tough one for us to do. We're pretending that we're separating the church and state, but really we're separating the other religions and the elements of our religion or Protestantism that don't align with ACR from the entity that supports and upholds ACR. I don't know that it's possible to achieve separation of church and state when that's the construct, because the state laws become the religious dogma. The believers in ACR will defend the state with their lives. It will appear what some people want to call patriotic, but really they're zealots depending on the group. So for instance, I'm not calling like the American military zealots. I'm calling terrorists who would try to kidnap a governor, religious zealot. So why does this matter? So we've gone through, we've defined it, we've named the God, we've talked about the symbols and what composes or comprises ACR. Why does this matter?
This matters because it appears that America is suffering from a bad theology in this space. The lack of definition, the lack of confrontation has a lot of people and a lot of factions and a lot of community groups and just breakdowns of different groupings. We are flirting with something that could be way more destructive than we realize because it hasn't been confronted. Or, you know, maybe we haven't been doing as good of a job with defining and making sure to call a thing a thing. And it's poisoning the relationship between believers and their understanding of what they actually believe in. It's gotten to a point where it can't be sustained. So we're doing this. You know, it's important to confront when we have possibly overstepped from something that resembles the church or what we think the church is into a cult-like fellowship, and where we could be with ACR in its worst rendition is that now you have almost like a cultish energy behind the veneration of this idea and ideal, this myth of America that threatens what America actually really is in real life.
We set all of this up to show how American civil religion is not Protestantism. It is not Christianity. It is what that faith and other faiths would call an idol. And as such, it must be treated however your faith prescribes for idols to be treated. So if you're Christian, you may flee idolatry, like 1 Corinthians 10 prescribes. You may put idols to death, like Colossians 3 prescribes. If you're Muslim, you do not follow idols, like the Quran says in Surah 7:3, because it is an unforgivable sin. Surah 4:48. Psalm says, Psalm 135:15, the idols of the nations are silver and gold, work of human hands. They have mouths, but do not speak. They have eyes, but do not see. They have ears, but do not hear, nor is there any breath in their mouths. Those who make them become like them. So do all who trust in them. Because American civil religion is undefined, we have the power to define it. We are not anti-American by defining it. Mm-hmm. We are advocating for deciding what is considered American, apart from how ACR describes it. America is more and has been more than a white, Protestant, capitalist patriarchy. America is diverse in its citizenry, in its faith. America can take care of her people because America is not an idol. It is a home. That's what's key to this. America is a home. And like any home, sometimes you need to renovate that home. So we have an election coming up. This is our time.
Absolutely.
You will hear more from us when we connect with the Brown Liquor Report about that. But we wanted to drop this episode first as a framework for how we're going to approach things going into November. For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.